The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from National Geographic. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to learn about a flightless bird that is one of nature's most renowned travelers. The Secrets of the Penguins is the featured article in the May 2025 issue of National Geographic. The writer is Hannah Nordhaus. Now, as one caption tells us, they're evolutionary marvels that survive some of the most inhospitable conditions on our planet. Now, researchers are discovering new explanations for why and finding that the incredible penguin has a lot to teach us about resilience in an ever-changing world. And as we will learn, penguins are accomplished travelers. For more than 60 million years, penguins have been driven to reach beyond their boundaries. Today, they continue to surface in unlikely places. Now, this article is actually divided into four parts. Part one explains how penguins embrace their urge to explore. Then in part two, we learn how penguins learn to live on the edge. And in part three, details about how the penguins' superpowers really work. And in part four, we learn how penguins push the limits of their capabilities. So we'll have some interesting things to learn about penguins as we begin. When Pablo Popi Borbaroglu, first visited a remote stretch of shoreline along the eastern coast of Patagonia in 2008, the National Geographic explorer was surprised to find penguins making a home there. The Argentine biologist was responding to a call from a nearby rancher who had seen several of the flightless birds on his property. When he arrived, Borbaroglu found trash, broken glass, abandoned cars, and burned-out campfires on the ground. The place was a disaster, he recalls. It was full of garbage. Amid the squalor, however, under bushes and in small cave-like burrows, he discovered something astonishing. 12 Magellanic penguins living among the debris. Each seabird was about 1.5 feet tall, with a distinctive white band encircling its eyes and neck. While Magellanic penguins are known to breed in and around South America on rocky, sandy beaches before migrating each winter to the open ocean as far north as Brazil and Peru, the nearest established colony was located more than 80 miles south. Yet these intrepid travelers had arrived and coupled up, a sign that they were breeding on a beach teeming with hazards. Borbaroglu worked quickly, assessing the condition of the colony and freeing one bird that was entangled in plastic, and began the longer process of painstakingly cleaning and securing the area. The emerging colony not only survived, but raised chicks, returning the next spring. Scientists have various theories as to why a so-called founder group like this ventures beyond familiar nesting grounds, but for Borbaroglu, who went on to create the Global Penguin Society, an international conservation group, the new colony exemplifies the adaptability and resilience of all 18 penguin species, which inhabit some of nature's harshest environments, even as they continue to face new challenges in our changing world. They are so brave and determined, he says, of penguins as a whole, adds, they're amazing. Well, penguins are indeed amazing creatures. Their comical, waddle, tuxedo-like appearance and enduring parental instincts make them quintessential conservation icons. But these same characteristics also point to some of the ways they've evolved to confront extreme conditions with remarkable adaptability and grit. The first penguins appeared roughly 60 million years ago on what is now New Zealand. Some scientists believe the absence of natural predators allowed the birds to evolve away from flight and toward more agility in the ocean. Over time, they developed ample stores of fat and a dense, impermeable layer of feathers to withstand the cold, stunted wings serving as flippers to propel them underwater with stunning speed and efficiency, and distinctive black and white feather patterns to confuse predators. Early penguins rode the currents across oceans, adapting to the new places where they landed. Emperor and Adelie penguins, for instance, settled in the unforgiving climate of Antarctica, and they have a thicker layer of body fat, scale-like feathers, and claw-like feet, especially suited to gain traction on the ice. Galapagos penguins ended up on a chain of islands off the coast of Ecuador, becoming the only species found at the equator. They have smaller frames and thinner layers of plumage, which served them well in the warmer climate. Historically, Magellanic penguins lived on the islands off the coast of South America, but after sheep ranchers eradicated mainland predators such as pumas and foxes, the birds established colonies there too. Now, penguins vote with their feet, says National Geographic explorer D. Boersma, a renowned penguin expert at the University of Washington. They go where the food is, she says. No matter how far they roam, many of the animals now face the same issues. About half the world's penguins are threatened with extinction, and last year the African penguin became the first to be classified as critically endangered. Today, the threats come from sea and land alike. In the ocean, penguins must run a gauntlet of oil spills, algal blooms, fishing nets, and plastic pollution, while warming waters and overfishing deplete their prey. On shore, where penguins mate and raise their chicks, they encounter hazards ranging from declining Antarctic sea ice to coastal development and introduced or resurgent predators. Over the past century, as penguin numbers faltered, the global conservation community and individual nations moved to safeguard the birds, banning egg harvesting and creating protected areas, allowing embattled populations a chance at continued survival. In the years since, conservationists like Borboroglu and Boersma have lobbied to create more protected areas for nesting and regulate shipping routes to reduce penguins' potential exposure to oil spills. One startling finding among scientists is that penguins are no longer evolving as fast, limiting their ability to keep pace with the world around them. A recent study showed that penguins now have the slowest evolutionary rates of all birds. Still, some appear adept at leveraging their best traits and behaviors to continue pressing into new territory. Researchers have discovered that emperor penguin colonies relocate when sea ice in one area is no longer reliable, and satellite imagery recently revealed previously unknown colonies in Antarctica. Meanwhile, king penguins, smaller cousins to the emperors, are in decline in Antarctica, but growing in the sub-Antarctic region, rebounding after decades of being harvested for oil. And gentoos, closely related to the Adelies, are following available food as the southern ocean warms and sea ice clears, allowing them more easily to hunt and nest in new areas of the Antarctic Peninsula. We're seeing new colonies established further and further south, says Jim Klukas, a researcher with the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. The handful of Magellanic penguins that once popped up in the trash-strewn beach in Patagonia appear to have inspired others to settle in the colony. As Borboroglu worked with landowners and the local government to create a 35,000-acre wildlife refuge, more and more penguins arrived each year. Over 8,000 penguins now nest here. Its growth has been remarkable, he says. It shows that nature can thrive if given a chance. Roughly 600 miles off the coast of mainland Ecuador, and this is the beginning of parts 2 and 3, we have the story of conservation biologist D. Boersma, who's cruising in an inflatable Zodiac, that's a kind of boat, through the blue waters surrounding the Bartolomé Island, a small part of the Pacific Ocean archipelago known as the Galapagos Islands. She was joined by several other scientists, all of whom scanned the shoreline for an elusive black-and-white seabird. Now, standing about a foot and a half tall, Galapagos penguins are in the rarest and among the smallest penguins in the world. But most notably, they are the only ones living at the equator, existing on these volcanic islands in the blazing hot sun. How could you not fall in love with these birds? Asked the 78-year-old director of the University of Washington Center for Ecosystem Sentinels and a National Geographic explorer. They're comical, they're curious, they're enduring. Bierzma suddenly pointed to five penguins near a cave, then another and another, seven in total. Once the boat got close enough to shore, two Ecuadorians, veterinarian M. Gavilanes Escobar and park guard Marlon Ramon, leaped out, easily scaling the sharp and slippery rocks. In less than 5 minutes, Escobar was back, lightly gripping a penguin under its chin with one hand and propping its feet in the other. He passed it to Bierzma, who was ready with her calipers to ascertain the size of the bird's bill and feet. Then she pulled out her yellow tape measure to discern the length of the bird's wingspan. "We're measuring him for a suit," she joked. These were the first steps in the process of recording information that allows researchers to monitor the health of the colony in this area. Next, Bierzma cinched a red cord around the penguin's chest and attached it to a scale. Now the flightless bird was dangling, in midair, flippers whirling. "That's a big one," she told her colleague Caroline Capello, a wildlife ecologist who has studied penguins in the Galapagos alongside Bierzma for more than a decade. Capello recorded the data, a little more than 5 pounds and likely a male. Freeing the feisty bird from the cord, Bierzma then secured its head between her left forearm and knee in a well-practiced maneuver to protect her legs from painful bites. "You're all right. You're all right," she told the squirming penguin. "You're so soft. Yes, you are. Calm down. We're going to let you go in just a minute." The penguin's flippers, thick at the top and tapered to a thin trailing edge, ideally shaped for soaring through the water, were in great condition, she noted, smoothing them with her hands protected by beige wool fingerless gloves. She affixed a tiny metal tag into the webbing of its left foot and gently set it down on the edge of the Zodiac. Seemingly unfazed by the ordeal, the penguin surveyed the water, then leaned forward and quietly plopped into the Pacific to again swim among green sea turtles and marine iguanas. "Touching a bird like that is electric," Bierzma said, as she watched it vanish beneath the surface. It is also an increasingly rare opportunity for researchers. Today, Galapagos penguins join the more than half of all penguin species that are classified as endangered or vulnerable, imperiled by such threats as warming temperatures, overfishing, habitat destruction, and pollution. Bierzma, who has been called the Jane Goodall of penguins, considered these birds to be marine sentinels or canaries in a coal mine, describing how one species' rapid decline signals a significant natural or human-made change happening within its environment. Still, she believes that the species has the capacity to hang on, in part because researchers continue to gain a better understanding of how these creatures leverage centuries of adaptations to be resilient in the increasingly unpredictable world around them. 54 years ago, when I started this, I thought Galapagos penguins would be gone by now, she said, but they're still here. The Galapagos penguins' evolutionary journey illustrates how environmental pressures shape species over millions of years. Genetic studies suggest they descended from Humboldt penguins roughly 2 million years ago during the Pleistocene epoch, a period marked by wide-ranging climatic changes. The earliest Galapagos penguin ancestors probably came on the islands by surfing the northbound Humboldt current that brings cold, nutrient-rich water along the coast of South America, likely settling on the western part of the archipelago on Isabella and Ferdinand Islands. The penguins found plentiful food and shelter. While the Humboldt and another current, the Cromwell, still flow here, they now bring nutrients and food intermittently in duration and intensity. One of the significant factors on how Galapagos penguins adapted to living in this warm climate is that they nest in cool, shady crevices on the islands. The coastlines are sculpted by explosive volcano eruptions and erosion, providing cracks in lava tunnels where penguins can avoid overheating. Their small stature allows them to squeeze into these dark places where they and their chicks hide from predators such as Galapagos snakes and Sally Lightfoot crabs. With a thinner layer of fat and fewer feathers than most other penguins, these birds evolved for life in the subtropics. Galapagos penguins, along with the Humboldt, Magellanic, and African species, belong to a group known as banded penguins for the distinctive black and white patterning around their chest and heads. They all live in warmer climates and regulate their body temperature by panting, similar to a dog on a hot day, and they stand with their flippers outstretched to release heat. White feathers on Galapagos penguins' faces and their featherless ankles and feet further help shunt warmth from their stout little bodies. The birds can also shed feathers around their faces during hot periods. But the adaptation that sets Galapagos penguins apart is their flexibility as to when they molt, and that's replace feathers, and breed, rather than having one fixed molting and mating season as other penguin species do. The timing is based on whether enough nutrients are being delivered from cool ocean currents and upwelling to give them energy to replace their feathers, which, unlike other penguin cycles, occurs before breeding and up to twice a year. They can delay molting and mating until food is available and there's a better chance of successfully starting a family. All of this adds up to a boom or bust way of life by tracking and measuring Galapagos penguins' weight and population numbers over decades. Biersma made the incredible discovery that their breeding is tightly in sync with the rhythms of El Niños and La Niñas. The birds thrive during a La Niña conditions, when there are strong currents of cold, nutrient-rich water flowing north, providing plentiful fish, squid, and crustaceans for the penguins. When El Niño's warm water in the central and eastern Pacific displaces the cool currents, it drastically reduces upwelling in their food supply. In years when provisions are scarce, some penguins starve and breeding comes to a standstill. It can take decades for the population to recover. During a severe El Niño in the early 1980s, the population fell by more than half. Now, as global temperatures heat up, El Niños are becoming more frequent and extreme, threatening to further reduce the availability of nutrients, while rising sea levels are inundating nesting sites. Still, Biersma has come to believe that even with the increasing frequency of El Niños and extreme weather events, some Galapagos penguins will persist because their ecosystem is also supported by periodic deep water upwellings, bringing pulses of nutrients to sustain the food chain. But if for some reason the currents change and productivity goes down, she said, they'll have trouble because there will be nowhere left for them to go but Peru or Chile, and that's a long swim. Biersma estimates there may be 2,000 Galapagos penguins left, less than half as many as there were 50 years ago when she started her trailblazing research. But she believes that a couple of crucial actions can protect their future. In order to survive and thrive, Galapagos penguins need humans to help them overcome two major threats: introduced predators, mainly rats and cats, and natural nesting areas becoming increasingly inhospitable. Now, solving the first issue is fairly straightforward. Cats and rats arrived in Galapagos nearly 200 years ago with sailors and whalers. They can easily scale difficult terrain and squeeze into nests of penguins and other seabirds, devouring eggs and chicks. Recently, the Galapagos National Park partnered with the environmental organization Xocotoco to undertake an invasive species eradication program on Floriana Island in the southern part of the archipelago. In October 2003, park managers began exterminating the rat cats on Floriana using traps and unmanned ultralight helicopters to disperse pellets of rodenticide and toxin-laced sausages across the entire island. The program appears to be working. Previously, a small number of penguins remained in the area, Biersma said, but not easily. Removing the predators and continuing to monitor for their presence will give penguins a fair shot at long-term survival. To mitigate the second threat, Biersma and her colleagues are hoping to obtain funding to build artificial nests and help the birds recolonize Floriana. Biersma first began thinking about constructing nests some years ago when she was puzzled by a penguin pair nesting on top of lava along the western edge of the archipelago on Fernandina Island without any shade. The birds took turns sitting on eggs from early evening until morning, but then retreated during the heat of the day, leaving the eggs unprotected. Eventually, the eggs died. Biersma realized that there weren't enough shaded nest sites to go around, and that might be limiting how many baby penguins could join the population each year. 15 years ago, she began experimenting with artificial nest designs that would blend into the environment so they wouldn't mar the island's natural beauty. The park didn't want doggy igloos or something like what they use at zoos, she said. One option was an inconspicuous little penguin carport made from stacked lava rocks. The other, the one the penguins wound up preferring, was created by digging cavernous holes directly into the hard lava substrate. As in all real estate, location was key. The nest needed to be close to the water, but not so close that they'd flood within the penguin's 3-month nesting period. The idea of building nests, Biersma says, is that if conditions are good, you want everybody that wants to breed to be able to breed. On the third day of the expedition, Biersma and her team arrived at Punta Espinosa on Fernandina Island, the first place Biersma had ever tried to build the artificial nest. They embarked from the Zodiac and walked carefully across the sharp lava slathered with iguana poop. Two members located and checked the nest sites, Capello 35, who is currently doing postdoctoral research at Cornell University, and Ara Banda Cruz, 42, a third-generation resident of the Galapagos, and a naturalist working aboard the Silver Sea cruise ship that hosted Biersma's survey while ferrying tourists around the Galapagos. Peering into a small space between the pile of rocks, Capello shouted that she'd found an artificial nest that appeared to have been used recently. There were shards of broken eggshells and downy feathers scattered around the area. Maybe it hatched, or maybe it was predated, Capello said as she slipped the eggs into a coin envelope for closer inspection later. Regardless, any sign of nesting activity was good news. In her work as a cruise ship naturalist, Banda Cruz has been nearly a decade photographing Galapagos penguins. This has led her to develop non-invasive methods to identify individuals using the distinctive patterns of spots on their chest. I realized that the spots were different on each one of them, she said. Each one is unique, like a fingerprint. Similarly, researchers have learned to identify jaguars, zebras, dolphins, and even koalas by their distinguishing patterns. Banda Cruz is hopeful that going forward in the periods between annual surveys like this one, she can partner with other expedition naturalists who will send more photographs, helping create a visual archive that can be used to discern penguins when they're sighted. The images can also provide records of the bird's overall health and the ratio of adults to juveniles. You can tell the adults because they have a white line around their cheek and their feet are black, Banda Cruz said. Juveniles have paler feet and white cheeks. What's more, the photos help document periods in which the penguins are working harder for their food, often correlating with an El Niño. They start spending more time in the water, Banda Cruz says. They don't have time to dry completely, and they start growing algae, so when you see a green penguin, it's a symbol that things are not going well for them. For her part, Biersma is thrilled to still be learning new things about the lives of Galapagos penguins, especially from this generation of scientists. For a long time, she worried she wouldn't have anyone to take over her Galapagos research when she retired. You realize when you're jumping and crawling around the lava that your days are numbered. You can't do this forever, she said, sitting on the edge of the Zodiac while her colleagues checked another area for penguins and signs of nesting. That's why I was so happy to find first Caroline and now Ara. I think they can make a dynamic team and carry it on for another 10, 20, 30 years if they want. She went quiet, watching a male penguin standing alone there on the shore, basking in the late afternoon golden light. Oh, the penguin brayed, trying to attract a mate. Oh, Biersma called back. He's saying, come see my etchings. I've got a good nest. Come take a look, she said, grinning. If the conditions stayed as favorable as they'd been in recent weeks, cold water and lots of fish, she felt confident. He'll be breeding soon. And now the final part of The Secrets of Penguins. Oh, my God, this thing's going to die. That was the thought running through the mind of wildlife filmmaker Bertie Gregory when he saw the first juvenile emperor penguin jump off a 50-foot cliff. The bird plummeted downward, splashing into the frigid Southern Ocean. After a few suspenseful seconds, it bobbed to the surface, then swam off toward the horizon. National Geographic Explorer couldn't believe it. What came next was even more shocking. More penguins from the crowd of several hundred huddled at the edge of towering ice shelf plunged one by one into the sea. There was a moment when it was just raining penguins off this cliff, says Gregory, who captured rare footage of the event with a drone camera in Antarctica's Atka Bay last year while filming Secrets of the Penguins, a new National Geographic documentary series. It was one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen. Some did graceful swan dives. Others slipped and tumbled headlong into the waves. Miraculously, nearly all survived the leap. Normally, young penguins jump only a couple of feet from floating sea ice into the water when they fledge, says Michelle LaRue, a conservation biologist at the University of Canterbury in Christchurch, New Zealand. The cliff-diving chicks that Gregory observed may have been raised on the permanent ice shelf and likely took a wrong turn, finding themselves in a tricky location for a water entry while simultaneously motivated by hunger and an ocean brimming with fish beckoning below. The scene was a true demonstration of the penguin's fortitude. These fascinating birds have evolved over millions of years to survive on the coldest, windiest, driest continent on Earth. Across the following pages, there are exceptional adaptations and specialized behaviors that make them uniquely equipped for this desolate environment are on full display. And the author is referring here to the many photographs and illustrations that do accompany the article. Now, many of their incredible traits can be seen during nesting season, which runs through the most challenging time of the year. Female emperor penguins lay a single pear-shaped egg early in the Antarctic winter when temperatures can dip to minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and winds can reach hurricane force. Needing to replenish their energy reserves, they quickly shuffle the eggs to their mates to assume caretaking while they trek out to the ocean to feed. Male emperor penguins spend the next 2 months incubating the eggs, balanced atop their webbed feet and shielded from the cold by a flap of the penguin's abdominal skin that forms a pocket or brood pouch. The soon-to-be fathers will go for nearly 4 months without food, losing roughly half their weight during breeding season. Eggs typically hatch by August, just as the females are returning to provide the young with a first meal. Then the chicks will be fed and warmed by their parents over the next 5 months. By mid-December, the Antarctic summer approaches. The chicks have started to shed their fluffy down for waterproof plumage. Soon they leave their colony and find food on their own. Juveniles, like those Gregory filmed, take a literal leap of faith into the sea. It is a pivotal moment when they begin their life in the ocean, where they'll spend an average of 5 years before returning to breed. Scientists do not think the cliff-jumping incident was directly related to climate change, but at least one expert speculates that warming temperatures may force more emperors to breed on permanent ice shelves instead of sea ice, increasing the chances of juveniles fledglings from tall heights. This incident underscores a stark reality. Under some climate scenarios, scientists predict 80% of Antarctica's emperor penguin colonies will disappear by the turn of the century. But LaRue remains hopeful about the emperor's ability to adapt, and she considers the recent high dive a testament to the penguin's hardiness. They're incredibly resilient, she says. They've been around for millions of years. They've seen lots of different changes in their environment. It's a question of how rapidly they're able to deal with the changes that are happening and how far they can be pushed. And by the way, interesting little tidbit here on a caption of a photo of these penguins. They've got their heads back and their bills going toward the sky, and they're calling ID, as they say in the caption. Emperor penguins can be distinguished by their vocalizations. Each bird has a unique call that allows mates and chicks to recognize one another amid the noise of a bustling colony. Identifying their chicks' whistles, parents trumpet back until they find one another. Well, I'm sure we'll get more stories about the penguin world in future episodes of Armchair Travel. For today, that's the end of our journey. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.